Thanks, Paul. I've taken a completely different tack today. I'm going to talk sort of a completely different geographical scale, mostly global. The kind of things that I'm interested in are providing empirical evidence for making decisions sort of beyond the simple what do we do about X and Y and Z right now, but giving a justification, if you will, for protecting biodiversity. So I've chosen, I do a lot of different things. I'm fairly eclectic in my research interests. They all sort of relate to biodiversity in some way. But I've chosen three examples using correlative or sort of semi-fancy correlative models, some species prediction models, as well as some variations on that theme. And we'll just walk you through that. Just start off by saying we are in a we have a very diverse world in terms of species. These are some of the rough indications of how many species we have on the planet. Unfortunately, we're in a state now of a rapid decline in many of these species. Now, we've gone through five major mass extinction events over the last a billion years or so, or 500 million years. And in the Permian, for example, we lost about 95% of all species on the planet. Now, we're currently in the Anthropocene, basically because it's driven mostly by us, the loss of species, with rates anywhere from 100 to 10,000 background rates, although that's a little bit contentious in its own right. As I said, my principal view now is to look at modeling as a way of convincing people that biodiversity is actually useful for health and welfare of people's families, food supply, even their health. And people, to understand the idea of ecosystem services, I'm not talking about the costs or the value of them per se, but there are some estimates that what intact ecosystems actually provide us in terms of a monetary value. If we had to pollinator on crops, for example, we would be looking at sort of 153 billion euros a year to do that. And if you think that about 95% of all of our crop species are pollinated by animals, and most of those rely on some sort of intact ecosystems to persist, not just the crops themselves. Fisheries, an obvious example. Some estimates of up to 50 billion euros lost per year right now from degraded systems, increasing to 14 trillion by 2050. Now, we're losing forests around the world at a massive rate. These are just some work that I've done and others. Australia, we've lost about 50% of our forest cover since European colonization, and most of what's remaining is fragmented. Even in the so-called intact parts of northern Australia, we have massive species decline. Kakadu National Park is a complete basket case. Just globally, so a recent paper just came out, we lost about 1 million square kilometers between 2000 and 2005. Or about 0.6% per year. Highest in the boreal biome, if you think the Amazon is the lung of the planet, then the boreal is the other lung, and we're doing damage to both of them. We're in there in terms of the dry tropics. We have some of the next highest deforestation rates, and nationally, Brazil, Canada, Indonesia, and Democratic Republic of Congo are leading the pack in deforestation. Now, something that's very topical lately, but is not a new phenomenon, of course, is flooding. We've done some work on this very issue and relating deforestation to flooding. And as you know, we're talking one of the most cataclysmic flooding events in recent history in Pakistan. And yes, that's been linked to all sorts of problems, including bad land use decisions, deforestation, and climate change. What we wanted to do is look at the link between deforestation explicitly and flooding. So we used a database, the Dartmouth Flooding Inventory, accumulating data between 1990 and 2000. Between that period, about 100,000 people were killed from floods. That's direct death resulting from the flood itself. 320 million people displaced, and over $1 trillion U.S. dollars in damage. So we took deforestation rates from 55 developing countries, mostly in the tropical zone, and we controlled for slope of the terrain, precipitation, antecedent soil moisture regime, and combined these using essentially just a fancy correlative model, mixed effects models that account for different sort of spatial correlations between the data sets. And what came out was quite clear. The top frame just shows you the partial residuals looking at flood frequency. As you increase the natural forest cover, you reduce the frequency of large floods, and this applies to both large and small floods. And likewise, when you increase your natural forest cover on the bottom axis there, you reduce the duration of the flood, which the longer the flood lasts, the more damage it incurs. Pakistan, again, another great example of that. Okay, I'm going to switch gears now.